based on a story that came out of Britain the other day. Turns out that the government over there has signed a 12-month contract with a company called Entrust, and they're going to provide the COVID-19 digital passport technology for your smartphone. This has caused a lot of uproar, of course, because they thought they were still debating this issue. Meanwhile, they come to find out that the government has already signed a contract. Let's learn a little bit more about that. Yesterday, the NHS app was upgraded to allow it to be used as a COVID vaccine passport domestically in England, with a message that read, quote, "You may need to show your NHS COVID pass at places that have chosen to use the service." Documents published Wednesday show that Entrust, a US-based IT firm, is set to receive almost £840,000 from the government to help produce digital COVID certificates via the NHS app. The contract is set to last until July next year, but it will likely be renewed until mid-2023, with pricing for a two-year contract already detailed in official documents. Entrust was awarded $250,000 earlier this year in a separate government agreement for its work on the UK vaccine passport scheme. The contract drew staunch criticism from MPs and civil liberties groups, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, they've already sent out the message. You may need to show your NHS COVID pass at places that have chosen to use the service. And this is how it's going to go, right? Different private companies or venues, restaurants, hotels, transportation services, they're all going to be able to choose whether to use it or not. So, you know, the state's not doing it. It's just private companies, and private companies can do whatever they want. Isn't that right? Well, we're going to go through the history of Entrust, the company that got the contract, and we're going to see that, yes, indeed, private companies can do whatever they want. You're not going to believe where Entrust leads us to. So what does Entrust do exactly? Entrust develops public key infrastructure, PKI, and secure socket layer, SSL, technology for encrypting and transmitting documents in electronic digital format via the internet. Who are some of its clients? Well, the Canadian federal government, including the Department of National Defense. More than 2,000 organizations in 60 countries, and this is as of 2009. It also handles the financial companies such as JP Morgan, Citibank, and RBC. But that's not all. Here's a notice right from Entrust in 2003, where they say that they have customers which include the U.S. Department of State, Department of Energy, Department of Justice, the State of Illinois, NASA, JP Morgan Chase, U.S. Coast Guard, the U.K. and U.S. Postal Services, Lloyds Bank, Merrill Lynch, the Government of Canada, and many more. So they've got their tentacles deep, deep, deep within the most secure transactions of all of those places I just listed. And keep in mind, that list, the one was from 2003, the other one was from 2009. How much has it grown since then? Well, who owns this company, Entrust? Well, Entrust was actually a part of another company earlier called Datacard. And Datacard is responsible for creating, stuff like bank cards and credit cards and passports and gift cards. Anything that can be printed on a card, Datacard made. So Datacard was originally the creation of a guy called Willis Drake in 1969, but in 1987, a family called the Quants acquired the company Datacard. Then they took it private, and later, in 2013, that's when they bought Entrust, the company we talked about first off the bat, the company which is providing the COVID vaccine passports for, at the moment, the UK, but it could possibly be the world. I just explained to you how far-reaching this company is, or at least was, in 2009, right? Okay, let's learn a little bit more about the Quant family, who own Entrust now. Here is a documentary called The Silence of the Quants, and it talks about their dealings in Germany during World War II. What might that be? And why haven't you heard of them? You haven't heard of them because this is in general how the mainstream press covers them. Here's Joanna Quant's obituary from 2015 in the New York Times. Joanna Brun was born in Berlin on June 21, 1926, the daughter of an art historian. She trained as a medical assistant, but in the 1950s began working in the office of Mr. Quant, the scion of a German industrial family whose holdings included Varta, a maker of batteries. They married in 1960. Mrs. Quant was a member of the BMW supervisory board from 1982 to 1987, most of that time as deputy chairwoman. They talk about how nice she is and how wonderful she is. And that's how the family is generally portrayed. They skip over a whole lot of detail when they talk about the Quants. Now, here's another obituary of Joanna Quant that has a little bit more to go on. It talks about her husband, Herbert Quant, having just inherited the companies from his father, Günther Quant, who died in 1954. The holdings of Günther Quant included battery producer Varta, arms producer Deutsche Waffen und Munitionsfabriken, which became Industriewerk Karlsruhe AG. They had a stake in a potash mine, Wintershall, shares in Stuttgart-based carmaker Daimler, and BMW. Okay, so that's a little bit more information, and we're starting to get, you know, a little bit more sketch. Arms manufacturing, things like that are coming up. It's still not a complete picture, though, of course. Here's the main players in this. Günther Quant, the patriarch who built the fortune originally. Herbert Quant, his son from his first marriage and husband of Joanna. And Harold Quant, his son from his second marriage. We'll get into Harold in a few minutes, but first I want to introduce you to the patriarch and his son Herbert and what their backgrounds really were. Günther Quant, the patriarch, began as a textile guy, and he made the uniforms for the German army during World War I. It says here he switched to the potassium industry, and that's Wintershall AG, in 1922, and he became a chairman of the supervisory board of the accumulator factory in Hagen, Westphalia, in 1923. And that's the main sort of big factory, which has a lot of smaller enterprises underneath it. In 1932, Q joined the National Socialist Party, NSDAP, the Nazi Party, and was named leader of the defense economy there in 1937. And the people involved in a sort of the main supporting arms of the German war machine, the German effort, they got a special title, Wehrwirtschaftsführer. Wehrwirtschaftsführer. It's a hard word to pronounce. I apologize. So these captains of industry, including Günther Quant, were named Wehrwirtschaftsführers. And if you got this title, it meant that your company could more easily use negative employment laws for the workers and employees. Negative employment laws. What does that mean? It turns out it means that you can take advantage of slave labor. This is from the Wikipedia biography of Herbert Quant, the husband of Joanna Quant. Because Herbert Quant managed some of these factories that his father, Günther, owned and operated. So it says, after extensive training at the family's companies at home and abroad, Herbert Quant became a member of the executive board of AFA, later Varta AG, and in 1940, Quant was the director of Petrix GmbH, a Berlin-based subsidiary of AFA. During the war, Herbert Quant was the director of personnel at his family factory. During his time as director, he personally oversaw an estimated death of 40 to 80 people each month through the use of slave labor, with each slave staying alive approximately 6 months. This turnover was due in large part to the concentration of acid gas in the air of the factory in which the slave labor was forced to work, mostly The Battery Factory. And I think that documentary I mentioned earlier, The Silence of the Quants, that mostly focuses on the Varta battery operation. And they interview people who had worked there, and they go through the whole history of it. It's really an interesting documentary. It's subtitled. I'll link to it in the description box for you. Slave labor was used extensively throughout the Quant factories, and as early as 1938. Known factories where slave labor was used included three factories in Hanover, Berlin, AFA's Stocken and Hagen plants, and Petrick's GmbH. Concentration camps were set up on the grounds of the AFA at Hanover, which included an execution area. According to the Schultz-Seck report, there were over 50,000 slave laborers at the Quant factories during wartime. Herbert Quant was not tried after the war, though his father was interned until 1948 while he was investigated. Benjamin Ferenc, a U.S. prosecutor at the Nuremberg trials, was asked about Herbert. He mentioned that Herbert kept quiet about any evidence that could have been used to prosecute him or his father. I mean, duh. Of course he did. Ferenc was convinced that if what is known about them today had been known at the end of the war, both Herbert and his father would have been prosecuted for crimes against humanity. As it was, they weren't. And they rebuilt. I don't even know how much they actually lost, to be honest. But they rebuilt, and the patriarch, Günther Quant, actually became an advisor, or a director, sorry, a director of Deutsche Bank. This is from an article in 1945 talking about German bankers helping Hitler and, of course, German industrialists as well. And I just want to say quickly before I move on, the Quant family was not the only family that did this. There are tons of companies that were part of this regime, IG Farben companies. A lot of them are chemical companies, pharma companies, Bayer, Hoechst. They're still in operation today. They never stopped growing. Some of their directors, after the war, were tried at Nuremberg, but they went straight back into management of these same companies that are operating today. The Quants have been excellent at keeping a low profile. How many of these companies have you ever heard of? Have you ever heard of Entrust? Remember why we're talking about this in the first place? Before you get too distracted, we're talking about it because they're making the COVID-19 passports. This family, this same family, who used slave labor extensively to enrich themselves during World War II. That's why we're talking about this. Okay, Günther Quant's companies and his status as a Nazi member is not the only deep tie that this Entrust company has back to the Nazi regime, to the totalitarian slave labor using German industrialists. There's another one, a big one. Günther Quant, after his first wife died, got remarried to this woman, and they had a son, Harold. With his first wife, Antoine Ewald, they had two sons, Helmut Quant and Herbert Quant. Antoine died of the Spanish flu in 1918, and their young son, Helmut, died in 1927. Following the death of his first wife, Günther remarried to Magna Berend Ritschel in 1921. His new wife was almost half Günther's age. Their marriage produced another son, Harold Quant. Günther and Magda ultimately divorced in 1929. 2 years later, in 1931, Magda married again to Joseph Goebbels. Curiously, their wedding took place on a grand property that belonged to Günther Quant. A rising political activist named Adolf Hitler served as the best man. Boom. Boom. One of the other heirs to the Quant fortune, who managed the businesses along with his brother Herbert after the war, is the stepson of Joseph Goebbels. In fact, according to some reports, Goebbels officially adopted Harold Quant. And isn't it weird that Günther just let Magda go and he actually allowed the wedding to take place on his own property. I think this indicates a very tight relationship between Quandt and the Nazi regime. And who knows? Maybe this was one of those instances of marriage to cement a business relationship, sort of like royalty does. But this is the new royalty. This is the industrialist royalty. This is the globalist regime being born. That's just a guess. Here's some photos from the wedding. There's Günther Quandt's ex-wife Magda with Hitler and Goebbels. And here's the whole fam-damily later. Goebbels and Magda went on to have 5 or 6 children. And then this is Harold, Magda's son with Günther Quandt, who apparently Goebbels adopted. A little more about Harold Quandt, who it says here is an industrialist. Having grown up with his mother, he served in the war, spent a period in captivity, and studied mechanical engineering at the schools of technology in Hanover and Stuttgart, qualifying as an engineer. Following the death of his father in 1954, he became head of the business group with his half-brother, Herbert. With Karlsruhe Industrial Works group of firms, he focused on the metal industry. He was chairman of the board of directors at Karlsruhe Industrial Works, and blah, blah, blah. He died when the firm's private airplane crashed near the Italian-French border. Yeah, it's weird about the captivity part, because most accounts say that he was in captivity in Benghazi, actually. And some say Canada. So which was it? And who knows? And you know, that plane crash, he died in a plane crash. He had had a separate plane crash, which he survived, just a year before. So, I mean, this is a bona fide case of people having profited from the crimes of the Nazi regime, crimes against humanity, and they still have all their money. They're still running around making money, talking to the press, and holding their head up high. And worse than that, they are the family who owns the firm who just signed a contract to track you, trace you, and give you digital permissions on where you can and cannot go based on your vaccine status. I mean, it's mind-blowing that this can happen, and here we are. You know how you always say, imagine if the Nazis had had the technology we have today? Well, guess what? They do. And they've admitted it. Here's an article from The Independent from 2011. BMW dynasty breaks silence on its Nazi past. Günther Quandt and his son Herbert, who both headed the dynasty during the Third Reich, willingly collaborated with the Nazi regime by employing an estimated 50,000 forced laborers in its arms factories. An average of 80 slave laborers per month died at Quandt factories, and many were executed. Gabriel Quandt, Günther Quandt's grandson, responded to the study's conclusion by admitting his family had been wrong in trying to avoid confronting the truth about its Nazi past for so long. Weak, weak, weak apology. But you see, it takes a special kind of person to do what they did in order to build their wealth in the first place. And they don't change their stripes, though they try to appear as if they care. Another huge company that was involved in the Nazi industrial machine was Siemens. And of course, this company, Siemens, is still very much a going concern. Here's a page on their website about their time under the Nazi regime. Listen to the flippancy. The German electrical industry, like the rest of the country's economy, profited from the upswing that had begun soon after the Nazis took power in 1933. Under the Nazis, the German economy grew noticeably from the mid-1930s until the end of World War II. This growth was based almost entirely on government armament contracts. As the leader in the German electrical industry, Siemens' revenue, like that of other major companies, increased continuously from 1934 and reached its peak during the war years. Carl Friedrich von Siemens was head of the company from 33 to 41. A staunch advocate of democracy, he detested the Nazi dictatorship. However, he was responsible for ensuring the company's well-being and continued existence. And so they just had to use forced labor. At the end of the 1930s, the regime's demand for armaments began to intensify. Without the aid of foreign workers, the manufacturing sector could no longer meet this demand. After the outbreak of hostilities in 1939, this situation worsened, since growing numbers of qualified employees at the company's various plants were drafted for military service. The use of forced labor was seen as the only way to compensate for labor shortages. Can you believe this? We had to use slave labor, we had to. Otherwise, we weren't going to keep our company profitable. Starting in 1940, Siemens relied increasingly on forced laborers to maintain production levels. These laborers included people from territories occupied by the German military, prisoners of war, Jews, Sinti, Roma, and in the final phases of the war, concentration camp inmates. During the entire period from 1940 to 1945, at least 80,000 forced laborers worked at Siemens. After the war broke out, production at Siemens' German locations was impeded by transport problems, a scarcity of raw materials, and in particular, labor shortages. Starting in 1942, the situation was further exacerbated by the air war. A large number of the company's factories in the Berlin area were destroyed by aerial bombardment, disrupting key manufacturing operations at the company's Siemensstadt campus. Meanwhile, the demand for armaments continued to increase. Company management reacted by establishing additional production facilities in other parts of Germany and in the territories occupied by the German military. Until 1943, these individual facilities served primarily to relieve supply bottlenecks. Later in the war, however, it became increasingly necessary to replace production capacity destroyed by Allied bombing. As a result, Siemens had transferred and relocated nearly 400 facilities by the time the war ended. These facilities also made use of forced labor. Oh, like, I can't believe this is on a public website, and I can't believe it's so verbose and over the top about how... Look, guys, we were a company. Our job was to make bombs and munitions and stuff for the war machine, and the Allies were destroying our war machine. So what we had to do was we had to enslave people. Not just in Germany, but elsewhere. Like, many tens of thousands of people, maybe over 100,000 people, we just had to. Because why? Because we had to win the war. So that why? So that we could do this more elsewhere? Can you see how the disconnect? I'm just blown away by how terrible that is. And, you know, okay, that's not the Quants. That's Siemens. But let's look at the Quants today, the younger generation. Okay, here's Joanna and her two children, Stefan and Susan. Let's look at Suzanne Klatten right here. She is Germany's richest woman, first of all. She helped transform her grandfather, Günther Quants, Altana AG, into a world-class pharmaceutical and specialty chemical corporation. What? Okay, we didn't even hear that company back in Günther Quant's bio anywhere. Altana? Altana, the pharmaceutical company? Well, we all know what pharmaceutical companies got up to in World War II. Maybe he got this company after the war ended. I'm really not sure. But there you go. So she owns that outright now, I think. Yes, she's the sole owner of Altana, which has more than $2.5 billion in annual sales. And not only that, she holds stakes in Entrust, the company we're talking about here that's making the digital vaccine passports. And she also has a carbon and graphite producing company called SGL Group. SGL Carbon. Carbon, graphite. Graphite makes graphene. And what's everybody talking about? Graphene in the masks, graphene in the swabs, graphene possibly, potentially in the vaccines. She's all set up. Suzanne Klatten is literally totally positioned for the global control grid, the final takeover that they were trying to do all through the German Reich, the Third Reich. It's just mind-blowing. And here's a more recent interview with her, June 20th, 2019. BMW billionaire heirs say their lives are harder than you think. Oh, okay, let's read this. Many believe that we are permanently sitting around on a yacht in the Mediterranean, Clatton told Manager Magazine in a rare interview. The role as guardian of wealth also has personal sides that aren't so nice, she says. Quant, her brother, owns stakes in logistics company Logwin and homeopathic medicine company Heal, and he has a net worth of $15.5 billion. For both of us, it's certainly not the money that drives us, says Quant. Above all, it is the responsibility of securing jobs in Germany. What a joke! What a joke! Susan, Stefan, newsflash, your wealth comes directly from the use of slaves. You want us to believe you care about jobs in Germany? You really want people to believe that? Maybe you care about labor in Germany, but you certainly don't care about paying people for them. If you did, you'd put down this burden of being a guardian of wealth. Just put it down, Susan. Put it down, Stefan. You don't have to be. Give it back to the people from whom you stole it. Down here in the ultimate irony, Suzanne says, wealth redistribution doesn't work. A fair society allows people to pursue opportunities according to their abilities. Yeah, if you have the ability to turn off all your humanity and decide to enslave people and put them to work in such terrible conditions that 80 of them die per month, then you are entitled to whatever wealth comes from that, because it's the rare psycho who would be able to stomach such a thing. So basically, we're living in the continuation of the systems that were put in place during World War II, whether you want to look at it as the Soviet tyranny or the Nazi tyranny. I mean, in this case, it's the direct descendants of the Nazis. I mean, I am talking, Suzanne Clatton there is the daughter of Herbert Quant, who oversaw the actual Nazi factories. That's how close this is. Have you ever heard of any of this? Will the press tell you anything at all about the background of Entrust, the company which just signed the contract for the digital vaccine passports in the UK? Will they tell you or not? Probably not, and guess why? Because the Quants made a pretty good move way back when. Joanna Quant, she set up a foundation. And you know what it does? It supports young people training to become business journalists, and they award a prize each year. The prize is 50,000 euros, so it's quite a bit. And they don't just give out one prize per year, they give out several. You can go here, I'll leave a link in the description box so you can see who wins these prizes. They're kind of meaningless to me because it's all in German and German personalities, and I've never heard of them. But rest assured, it is continuing on. Here's their website right now, and they're going to have the prize again in 2021. Why are we talking about all this again? Oh, right. This is the family that wants to digitally enslave you. The prison without walls. The digital gulag on your cell phone. Why did they call it a cell phone in the first place? Does anybody know? I honestly don't. Because at this point, when I think of that word, all I can think of is prison cell. Entrust just acquired another corporation here, World Reach Software. World Reach Software is another Canadian company. Look what it says here. With the WorldReach acquisition, Entrust can help these organizations reshape government. That's what they're after. They want to be the government. They've built the slave system, the totalitarian tyranny, once already. And we thought we had defeated it. That is, we regular folks thought we had defeated it. All the industrialists and the globalists from all around the world, the world government types, they knew that everything really survived. And they just went underground until the technology advanced to the point where they could spring it all back out on us again. And that's what they've done, I believe. All right. I'm going to stop talking now. Please don't forget to support this channel if you can by going to amazingpolly.net. You can use the online financial contribution form there, or you can send me something through the regular post through my address, which you can also find on that page. Please like this video. Please subscribe if you haven't. Leave a thumbs up. Leave a comment. And don't forget, I've got another channel now, More Polly. All of these things will be in the description box, which is directly below this video.